Hello and welcome to the Thursday, August 30th, 2012 edition of the SANS Internet Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and I'm today recording from Jacksonville, Florida. Let's start as usual with diaries. We got a note from a reader about a new paper that was written about the use of data URLs in phishing. Now, this is not necessarily a new issue, but certainly one that's frequently overlooked, and we don't really hear a lot about these data URLs, even though they're definitely used in phishing. They are also used in cross-site scripting exploits, so it is something that you should be aware of. Now, the special thing about these data URLs is that essentially the entire content of the page is part of the URL. These URLs start with data, and that's where the name comes. So instead of HTTP, it's just data colon, then the MIME type, the encoding, which is usually base64, and then just the data encoded, of course, in base64. Now, you could include images, you could include HTML, whatever you like, you can include. So if a user clicks on the link, the URL bar will say HTTP colon. Actually, usually it tries to translate some of the URL encoded data. In particular, if it is an image, for example, it will look like a gibberish in the URL bar. But the page itself, well, it displays whatever the content of the data URL is. As part of the diary, I'm pointing also to a little online tool, the Data URI Kitchen, as it calls itself, which is a simple web app that allows you to create these URLs. You just copy paste the HTML that you would like to encode, and it comes back with the appropriate URL. The paper that prompted this post suggests that this could be used for essentially web server-less phishing. So phishing where you don't need a web server to actually host the phishing page on, because the entire page is in the URL. Now, you still do need something to receive the data if you're trying to do phishing. So you have your password form, the user clicks submit. Where does the data go to? One thing you can actually do is you can use JavaScript to submit the data, and then you don't even need to submit it to a web server. You could just make the JavaScript essentially look up host names and then exfiltrate the data via DNS, and that turns out to be quite stealthy. And then once the user clicks submit, you just redirect them to the valid page that the user thinks they went to, and then they think they got a bad login and try again. So quite tricky what you can do with these data URLs. Definitely something you should be familiar with and you should be recognizing. It is an old feature. The RFC is from 98 and it is supported in all browsers. It is used in valid sites. So yes, you can remove it. I would remove it in particular from emails. However, otherwise you shouldn't just wholesale block data URLs. And OS X malware is not going away. We have a new report from Dr. Webb about something they call VirNet. The special thing about this particular piece of malware is that it does affect Linux and OS X. So we had a lot of hoopla the last few days with Java and cross-platform attacks affecting Windows and OS X, but this time it's Linux and OS X. And that may be a new trend here as we see more fragmentation on the platforms, and Windows is no longer the only platform really out there. That multi-platform malware, particularly written in Java, will become more prominent. Now, this particular malware is not a Java exploit. It just apparently relies on the user installing it. It will exfiltrate passwords from various applications like web browsers, email clients, and instant messaging clients. And Toyota apparently suffered a rather nasty insider attack after firing a contractor. This contractor went ahead and logged into some of Toyota's systems that are used to communicate with suppliers, deleted data, and also exfiltrated some confidential data from these systems. Well, and that's all I got for today. So thanks again for listening and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.